Welcome to the Breaks and Joins podcast. I'm Sue Mayo, and I'm working on a project about repair of our stuff, ourselves, and our communities. And in each episode, we meet somebody who's really deeply involved somehow in repair of all kinds. Really hope you enjoy the podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe and share it with your friends.
My name is Chuck Blue Lowry, and I am a filmmaker working on the project. I will be editing all of the podcasts. The podcasts have been recorded in line with social distancing measures, so if you do hear the occasional background noise, like a dog barking or a dodgy internet connection, it's all just part of the recording from home setup. Regardless of that, we have some fantastic conversations in store for you, and we really hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening.
We're really delighted to welcome Toby Peach. And Toby's a theatre maker. He's artistic director of Beyond Arts, which we'll be talking more about today. He's also associate director at Coney, the Interactive Theatre Makers. And he has an award-winning five-star show called The Eulogy. Just tell us about the award.
It's a few years back now, Sue. We won the Underbelly Award through Ideas Tap. I don't know if you remember Ideas Tap. They are no more, which is a real shame, but they used to support artists going up to Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And yes, it was my first show and won this award to go up to Edinburgh. And then it went quite well, which was wonderful. And I managed to tour this show, continue to tour it, evolve it, morph it into different things. And it's reached over 7,000 people now. And I got to perform on the West End once as well. It's, really unexpected. But yeah, that's how it's all come about, the Eulogy. Yeah.
That's really exciting. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that also a little bit later. But I'm just curious about seeing behind you. There seems to be a little bit of sunlight. Is there sunlight? This is a rare thing at the moment. We are recording in January, and here in the UK, it's been bitterly cold. But we're on Zoom and I can see some light behind Toby. So tell me where you are.
Yeah, there is some lovely light here in kind of South London. And my room is full of houseplants. Some are doing well. It is, as you say, January. So we are in that wonderful, difficult time where we're like, I can't save you, but I'm fine. And I also have my lovely cat, Clementine. She's sat over here. And she's an old girl, and she does get quite interested when I'm speaking on Zoom, when she hears voices. So she might jump up into my lap.
Excellent. In the Breaks and Joins podcast, we try to cover a lot of different aspects of ideas around mending and repair. And that takes us from the very practical. Most recently, we've been recording on site at a place called Rotherhithe Shed, which is a drop-in place for mending and making for older people. And so we do talk to people who are doing material repair, but we're really interested in how the language of repair works across so many other fields. And I'm very interested to hear a little bit more, really both about your show and the experience that led to your show, Eulogy, and then the way that has then taken you into setting up Beyond Arts and working with other people with experience of a cancer diagnosis. So I'd be great if I can just hand over to you and you can give us some of that story.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a blood cancer, when I was 19, and then again when I was 21. I should say I'm really bad with dates and ages and numbers, which is very odd because the Eulogy, the theatre show, is actually full of those. I had this experience of having cancer when I was kind of in my formative years, I like to think. And I had just finished doing a degree in community theatre. I was first diagnosed in my third year, and then just after I'd graduated. And I realised, as I had gone through that experience, I didn't really understand what had happened. I'd kind of blocked it out and gone, right, moving on. Come on, let's get on with life. And at BAC, they did a one-on-one festival many years ago. And it was the first time I got to talk to people about what had happened. And I realized it was the first time I was actually understanding it myself. I talked about the science of stem cell transplants in that. And two strangers would come and meet me, and I would talk about the science of stem cell transplants. And kind of really like made me interested, because I was like, oh, I knew nothing of that. And that thing was quite big in my life. So I started writing about my experience of cancer and trying to understand what had happened and trying to put together the narrative, I guess, of from diagnosis to finishing treatment. And it started to kind of piece together, oh, there are lots of little moments of science here. And I'd read a book called The Emperor of All Maladies, which is the biography of cancer. It's a thrilling read for a commute home. It's an incredible book, actually. And through that, started to look at the science of cancer and realizing that cancer is obviously just you, in the sense that it is the cells are your cells and they're replicating, but unfortunately they're not replicating the way that you would like them to. And I was interested in talking about that, and how cancer is really just a terrible one-man show where you play all the parts, which is a line from the show, because this language which was being used around me about fighting and battling and surviving and survivor were things that I was always very kind of interested in, because as I discovered that it was me, I was like, well, that implies that I'm fighting myself. And therefore, there was a big question of going, well, actually, how am I alive? In the 1940s, they were doing trials with children with leukemia. They were using treatments developed from mustard gas and seeing how that would impact the young people who had lots of white blood cells, basically. And actually, if I had been born just over 70 years ago now, that's right, isn't it? Yeah, just over 70 years ago, I wouldn't have survived. I wouldn't have stood any chance. And I was really interested in that, because it came to the case of going, well, actually, what gives you hope beyond a diagnosis? A lot of people talk about, oh, you're fighting, you're battling, and you're doing that. And I do believe in the mental side of that and the need to kind of keep positive and engage in what is being offered. But I really wanted to understand and talk about how humanity had saved me, and to look at things like the humans who had put together, like Marie Curie, Sidney Farber, to say these incredible people who developed stem cell transplants. I looked at the people who went through it with me, my partner, my family, and then it became a little bit of also a love note to the NHS and the acknowledgement that my treatment cost. I did work out a point as well, and I can't remember what it will be now, but it was, yeah, kind of like £200,000. And with that, you look at going, how fortunate I am that people had decided to do that for me. And with that, the question at the start that character poses is, how am I still here? And the answer at the end is you, the audience. It's about those taxpayers. It's about people who come together and mean that we can have a chance. And that was the eulogy of Toby Peach, which, yes, I now shorten to just be calling the eulogy, so I don't have to repeat my name lots of times. So
that's such a strong image, actually, to kind of invoke that sense of a circle between you and the audience. Mm. And I think it's something that really gets forgotten, that there are the professionals, absolutely crucial, and all of that knowledge. But actually, the NHS is funded by everybody.
Mm.
And therefore, everyone is implicated in each other's recovery.
Yes.
In a way which we do often set to one side.
And unfortunately, it is something which you tend not to appreciate until you need it. And that's quite a hard thing. And there are a number of moments I've acknowledged that, of going, I've needed that at a young age. And obviously, it's the same way with a number of things. You don't expect to have a serious health condition, which might mean that you need protected care. So it is a case of, at a young age, so it is a case of, you acknowledge, oh, actually, this this thing is important and we should be looking to support it as best we can, because, oh, if I need it in my 20s, what will happen when I'm in my 80s, 90s? I don't know. And that was the big concern for me as I started the show, and I think too when I last performed it, and thinking how far things, how much things had changed, and acknowledging that actually when I talked about it, when I first did the show in 2016, we were in a very different NHS to the NHS we are in today. And that's always been one of the reasons why I've been really keen to keep doing the show and telling the story, and finding ways to tell it in different ways, because I just want to talk about how that real element of talking about what is giving us hope, because I think we do, and I say this in the show about the fact it is a one in two situation with cancer, and we know that now. And actually, if we want to give hope to people, we do need to be, that's what we need to be pushing for. It's more support for places where we're developing new science responses to that. We're developing the treatments at the moment, and the support that goes around those as well.
What is it about telling the story and you taking the time to tell it to other people, and you formulating what you want to tell? What is it about that process that is strengthening or connective? Why is it that telling stories makes such a difference?
For me, it was about finding a language and finding a way to comfortably share it. And I always use comfort over confidence, particularly with a lot of my work, about going, actually, the work that we do now is not about finding ways that people can confidently stand on a stage and deliver their story, or I don't know, make a song out of it that will be a massive hit or anything like that. It's just that you can comfortably talk to another human about it, because we know connecting to other people is a really good way to explore your own experiences, particularly if they're traumatic experiences, and finding a way to acknowledge them, perhaps not to deny them, and to find what you want to hold on to within that story. That is one of the things that I've been really fortunate about. And I really, that's kind of started my work with Beyond Arts, really, was that I realized that I was really privileged that I had the chance to stop and reflect. Partly that was because of the fact that I had gone to drama school and I had had some skills around community theatre. But it was also the fact that I'm a middle class man and I had the option to stop and reflect. And there were places I could do that. And I realized that actually what I wanted to be doing was finding new ways that other people could tell their stories, because I really saw the benefits. It was a case that I found afterwards, it is a difficult process going through looking at those experiences, because they are difficult, they're traumatic. And I do really believe that finding a language for it has made it easier for me to talk to other people like yourselves right now. And there is an element of that being able to help me as I progress beyond those experiences. And I am beyond those experiences now. I'm 12, 13 years. I was saying this to you, Sue, wasn't I? I can't really remember, which is really embarrassing. Lots of people I know who've had cancer know their dates. And we talk quite a lot about how I'm useless in that regard. I cannot tell you. I couldn't tell you what my discharge date was. I can't tell you what my diagnosis day was or anything like that. But I know it's in that ballpark, 13, 14 years.
Yeah. I'm curious about how you invited people into Beyond Arts. What attracted them to come and share stories?
I think because we started working in places that they were already meeting. And I think that's a really interesting idea of meet your audience where they meet. So I took the eulogy to theatre venues, but then I also took it to conferences, particularly where young people who'd had cancer were meeting. So I did an incredible Teenage Cancer Trust conference called Find Your Sense of Tumour, which I always love talking to people who are not in that world and explain that, because it kind of blows their minds. And yeah, I did that show, and I did it after my Edinburgh run, and I was really nervous about performing to these 300 young people who were either in treatment or just discharged, or and had very different cancers to me, and might be have different paths ahead of them because of that. And I was so nervous. And because in Edinburgh, I performed to audiences of 30 or 40, 50, but actually one or two of them would have a direct link to cancer either right now or, and so they're very different. And I did it to these 300 young people and it really connected. And I was like, oh, I see now. That's really interesting. This works in these spaces and this is doing something really different and I think landing really well and connecting because of the conversations I was having afterwards. And that was the start really to go, okay, how can we make work that will continue to reach into these spaces? And then what happens from that are that people come and talk to you about, well, actually, you've shared your story. Can I come and talk to you about this? And I found that difficult at first. I really acknowledge that because I was suddenly being inundated with people coming up and telling me about, I really remember this one moment where somebody came up and said, oh, I had the same cancer as you. Did you get itchy feet and things? And I was like, oh, no, I didn't, but I have itchy feet now. Oh, my word, my cancer's come back. And it was really quite difficult. And that was a challenge as well, and learning to cope with listening to other people's, going from that moment of telling just my own narrative and being like, this is my narrative, I can control that and share that, whilst then it was bringing in other people's. And I started slowly. I worked with another young person who was an artist as well. We met at an artist residency, and by chance we both experienced cancer at a young age. We were the only two people on that residency. It was really interesting. We hadn't planned it, and I was at that point interested in making a show, another show, a sequel as such, and it was supposed to be a solo show. And then I started working with her, and it actually changed entirely, because what we were starting to look at was how there are lots of different ways that you can respond to being beyond a cancer diagnosis, and in this sense, beyond treatment. Because that show, The Other Side of a Hurricane, was all about the fact that the narrative normally stops after treatment. We don't hear often the narrative of what happens afterwards and the invisible impacts that you, particularly if you're a young person, have to then begin to understand. And that show went again to conferences. We went to patient events where people could come and connect with the story directly. And we recently made it into a film, which was really interesting, for a global cancer conference where they bring Australian, American and UK teams together, really to give this understanding of what life might be like, and the fact that it's not just one way, and some of these very key themes that we wanted to explore, which were about identity, were about survivor's guilt, were about anxiety. So it really looked at those kind of key themes. And then again, you move into, we then worked with a group of eight young adults who'd had cancer. And then we started exploring that, and we made a theatre show, which did go to a theatre, but then it went straight away to Find Your Sense of Tumour as well. And then from that, we started building more connections with Teenage Cancer Trust and charities like Trekstock, a young adults cancer charity, and looking at different ways that we could tell these stories. Because obviously, some people come to theatres, some people will never go to theatres. And as you are seeing as well, podcasts are really accessible for different people who might engage with them. So we started looking at ways that we could tell stories and invite people who might want to come and talk to us and tell stories on our podcast. And that was what we were really clear on, was that there were some amazing cancer podcasts. Yumi and the Big C is obviously very popular, has over the years had lots of changes, but they're a conversational podcast. But what we wanted to do was to go, okay, let's give some tools out about how you tell stories to the young people and young adults that we're working with, and ask them to craft a story for us. And we would help that, because stories are ways to engage, and if they're entertaining and if they take you on a journey, then I find that particularly with difficult subject matter like cancer and the invisible impacts that are around that, you can find it easier to engage with. And when particularly we wanted to talk about very kind of diverse stories, it was a case of going, that's our way in, is that we can really introduce them through storytelling.
That's so interesting. Such an organic process, actually, from your own life experience and then all the way through these different iterations. I think it's fascinating. And it makes me think a lot about the whole area of visible repair in the material repair world, that's been a huge shift in repair, is recognizing that not only is there nothing wrong with being able to see where things have been mended, but that for a lot of people, that's something to absolutely celebrate. And actually, in some traditions, in Japan, for example, that's been historically the way of repair, is that you see it and you appreciate it. You love these extra squares of fabric that are being put on, but you don't eliminate it from the history of the thing that's been mended. And I think it's such a, for me, it's a very humane way to look at things, that there are the marks and there are the consequences as well. Like somebody who I met just carries a terror of hospital now, having stayed very strong through a lot of treatment, once discharged, became prey to an absolute terror of ever going back into a hospital. And so that's great that they're better, and then they have something else to manage. And I think when we were talking before, you used that analogy of the hurricane, and I guess there's still a little bit of the wind around. I mean, it's not a hurricane anymore, but yeah, it's not something that's over.
Yes. Yeah, that is the important kind of note, I guess, with having experienced cancer, is that it doesn't go away, I don't think. So now I'm 13 years in remission, and it continues to influence your life. And it continues to influence little moments that pop up, because I'm, say, 34 now, and I'm at a time in my life, I've been with my partner who was with me throughout that. So I've been with her for 14 years. And it's really kind of, it really created a lot of the experience we have between meeting and to here, and little moments of, as we say, survivor's guilt, anxiety, looking at fertility as well. That's a big thing now, of being in your early 30s and looking at the fact that a decision you made when you were in your 20s, which feels so long ago, but actually there was a decision that was made there, and that has an impact on me now, and really acknowledging that. And it's about time, I think. I think there's something as well about acknowledging things take time, and not to kind of dismiss that's a failure, that you haven't completed. You are not back to what you were within 5 years, because there's this odd sense that you should be, you finished your treatment in, you might come through your treatment and you might be off active treatment, which is something to be in full remission. And you're expected to be back to normal. And particularly at the moments when you kind of, your hair grows back and you look normal. And I looked normal quite relative, like maybe 6 months later, I was back to looking normal. And everyone thought that was the case. And I think I did as well. And there is the sense of just taking like a zoom out, really, to acknowledge that it does take time. And there are little moments where you're continuing to do some patchwork, and you're starting to this bit's come frayed again, and you go, okay, that's part of, and it's part of the process, really, and it's part of life, really. And I think that there is just to acknowledge that there's no right or wrong way, and I actually don't think that you ever really will finish kind of repairing beyond that, because I don't think I think it's just part of life now as well.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I can understand how the desire to get back to normal it keeps you going. It's something that you hope for, that when things have been so seriously derailed, you want to be back to how you were. But of course, we can't ever visit who we were before. And suddenly the word normal can't quite fit the picture.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm also imagining that for the young people you work with, it's incredibly important that you are doing this work, having gone through the experience, that it's not work that they would do with people who haven't been there.
Yeah, I do think that there's real strength in that. And I think there's strength in them connecting to say, oh, this is another human who might have had similar experiences, and always going in and going, I had an experience. It's probably going to be very different to yours, but hopefully we can connect on some things. I did a project with a girl called Carmen, and we worked together over 3 years. I met Carmen when she was 10. And we produced a piece of, it was supposed to be a theater show, a two-hander. The pandemic unfortunately stopped that, but actually it morphed into a digital storytelling piece, which now lives in Great Ormond Street. Carmen met me because she'd read an article about the eulogy when she was in hospital, and we were on a non-cancer theater project. And Carmen came up to me and said, Toby, you've had cancer. And I was like, oh, yes, I have. She was like, I've had cancer too. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know. I saw on the form. I didn't bring it up, obviously, but I was like, yeah, I know. And she was like, oh, where was your cancer? I was like, oh, it's in my blood. She was like, wow, I didn't know you could get cancer in your blood. Mine was in my brain. And I was like, yeah, oh, okay. And I asked her mom how they knew, and we started talking, and Carmen really connected to me because the fact that we'd both had cancer, because as young people, you don't normally have cancer. And even though we had such different experiences. I went through mine when I was 19, 21. She went through hers when she was 7. She had a brain tumor, which is so different to a blood cancer. But we continued to kind of talk, and actually ended up, she wanted to tell me stories, and we wanted to explore together how we could tell a child's story, because actually I'd been speaking to a charity who were like, oh, yes. Teenagers and young adults are starting to find agency to tell their stories, particularly through social media. And but children's stories are often just retold by parents and doctors. And I was like, oh, really? Wow, I know this 10-year-old, and she will not stop talking to me about her story. And so we went on a journey, which was to find her language and finding a way that she could comfortably share that. Which was to create then this final piece, which is this digital storytelling piece, which you can find online. It's totally free, called The Origin of Carmen Power. And it goes through telling her story using her language, which is using Lego, which is using toys, which is using shadow puppets, and all this language about how you might become a superhero. But it's also within that, the difficulties of, she always called me her psychic, Tremendous Toby. She was Carmen Power. She labeled me Tremendous Toby. And I've always found that difficult, the language of being a superhero, because I've never seen myself as that. That's, again, that's that sense of people who are coming with different stories and different ways of telling their story, their narrative, and just finding a way to give a platform which can explore that and talk about the fact there are differences within that. And that's what we found with our podcast, Afterthoughts, is we've now had, I think, 34 storytellers on, lots of different cancers, lots of different types of young people coming on, and just the importance of going, actually, yeah, we need to tell different stories, because I might connect with that one because I see the values within that, or I might connect with that one because, oh, I definitely had that experience, or I listened to that and I'm like, well, I never had that, but that's really interesting of what happened to you as a human. I think that's just really important.
And just finding the language, actually, just locating the words seems to me to be such an important and interesting thing in terms of feeling that you can be a voice for your experience. And it doesn't just overwhelm you. You can begin to pull it out and tell it and create something from it. Yeah, I'm getting lots of kind of analogies with stitches and patches and things, but I can't quite get a hold on them right now. I'm going to bring you to a question that we ask everybody who we speak to, and that is, can everything be mended?
Yes, and I have been thinking about this one. And I think I was thinking about it from the experience of being beyond cancer and thinking within that of going, have I been mended? am I fixed? Because and I really then start to think about, oh yes, that is a process that you're encouraged to go on to fix, to mend. And I was like, well, actually, I'm not going to be that person before. And so that idea of being like, what is something that's fixed? I'm sorry to be slightly like, go symbolic in that sense of going, actually, it's a case of there's an object, a thing, a human, a being beforehand, and there's a being, an object, a thing afterwards. And there is this sense of we decide, like it seems society decides what's broken and what's fixed. And I don't know, would there be a case I would say of going, actually, there could be new uses, there could be new things that are now applicable, now available, and that I just know this language for in the cancer world, in my opinion, perhaps means that we feel like we're not right until we are fixed. And actually, I've come to appreciate, I think, as the years go by, that this is just part of me, and that experience is part of me, the highs and the lows of it, and the rips and the tears, and maybe I'm stitching some bits up because I feel like they don't serve me today, and some bits will rip further as I go forward. But it is just acknowledging that it's just part of that. And actually now what I am is full of these bits, and some of that's cancer related, some of it's not at all as well. And that's why it's that's an important part of it as well, is acknowledging that it's not just that time now that is influencing my life. It's part of it, but it's not all of it.
That's great. Thanks very much. So it's been fantastic to talk to you. Just for those listening, links to all the things that Toby's mentioned will be up with the podcast. And so you'll be able to follow and see those films and read more about him. It's been such a great experience to chat to you. Thanks for your generosity and sharing that brilliant story.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's really been really interesting to think about it through this lens. So thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Breaks and Joins podcast. And I hope you'll enjoy listening to the other podcasts too. If you want more information about the project, you can find us on www.sumeo.co.uk and also on our Instagram page, breaks_and_joins. We'd love to hear from you. A big shout out to our funders, Arts Council England, Necessity, and the Being Human Festival. And finally, I'd like to thank my wonderful editor, Chuck Blue Lowry, and Bob Carper, who wrote the music for the podcasts. Thanks, and hope to see you soon.